Welcome back. It's another week of the Barbershop. I'm your host, Mark Gray, joined by, looks like we might have a long-term deal in place.
Look, man, I told you, I was fired against my will. I was asked to leave the building. Security came in. You know it's trouble when they put the arm behind the back.
When we said, when your stuff was in a box when you got here.
You walk in, Mr. Houston, can you come in? What'd I do? Did I leave? I didn't put the alarm on. Give me a chance, MG.
So we're back.
No, it's good to be back, though, man.
And, of course, the worst producer in the business, A1. How you doing today, sir?
We're still waiting on our data.
Doing well. How are you guys doing?
Yeah, what was that data we were supposed to get? You didn't have it.
I had it that day. That night. Maverick 67 game. I had it, like, 5 minutes later.
5 minutes after the show was over.
5 minutes in his time. That's relative to 5 days.
Right. Well, that's why they call you the worst producer in the business. But it is a pleasure to have you. A detriment to the show. The show could not go on without you. It will, though. Let's see. Where we want to start? Couple things to talk about before we get into the NBA playoffs. Excuse me. Right. Well, today we'll start right here with you. And you're right up your Will Alley. Chicago Bears. Ray McDaniel.
Mr. McDonald. It doesn't surprise me that this incident occurred. Because he's had about 3 of them rolling in,
right,
to this situation. What surprised me, though, is how soon it happened. Like, you'd think maybe this happened, you know, get a couple game checks. Maybe, I don't know, maybe, you know, maybe we made the playoffs and just overdid it and I get a DUI or something. Somewhere along the lines of, I wouldn't think that would happen, like,
before you even got to camp.
Like, I haven't really even got a check yet. Like, I mean, I think I got, like, you know, a little bit of sign about, I mean, he hasn't even got like a workout check yet.
Nope.
Yeah, I just. But what it goes to a point that I was thinking about is the mental health of these athletes that we have needs to, football players especially, really needs to be looked at, because I'm not going to just subscribe to the fact that either dude's been doing something his whole life and people have been sweeping it under the rug, or something has happened to dude in his life that he's making all these abrupt uneducated and misinformed decisions. So something's awry there. Something's amiss. You know, it's, you reading the article in the 911 call. It's like, you know, the woman's mother, his ex-fiance's mother is calling like the police to say, yeah, my daughter just texted me to say, call the police over here. Ray's drunk and won't let us leave. It's like, that's scary. Like, you know, at a certain point, something, like I said, it could be brain injury. I don't know what it is, but at a certain point, you find that you get these abrupt reactions and these kind of things that are coming from these athletes. And it is not like, okay, what happened his rookie year? Now he's 30 years old, 7-8 years down the road in the league. That's probably taking an incredible amount of contact, you know, to the cranium. And now you're getting these guys that are acting out.
Do you think there's a correlation between the violence? Because obviously the outlier would say there's, you can insert player's name here who played 100 years and never hurt anybody. Do you think there's a correlation, or is it more, I think that it's violent people play this. I don't think it's fair that you can draw the conclusion and say that football makes these people violent.
Right.
I think that it's a sport that attracts, no more than you could say a boxer is the best, if you want to start with a DNA. Like, I would want my boxer to have Mike Tyson's pedigree more than Lennox Lewis' pedigree, because Mike Tyson literally wants to knock the guy's head off. Lennox Lewis just wants to box and just happens to be good at it.
Yeah.
But my guess is he doesn't have a desire to knock anybody's head off. Go ahead.
Can I interject? You guys familiar with Chris Benoit?
Yeah.
I mean, the guy had no history of family violence. Seemed to be a pretty upstanding family guy, and
one day,
a violent sport, and just one day snapped, and you know what I'm saying?
Killed.
No, I'm not saying that's the case for, you know, every case is individual, but I think that shows that you can have a situation where just over time, stuff just happens and it builds up, and then one day you just snap, you know what I mean?
But that could be the same thing for the guy who works at Wendy's, you know what I mean? If guys who work I'd say
it could be, but it's just awfully coincidental that you're getting. See, what I don't hear is like, LeBron James or DeAndre Jordan, or you don't hear about these guys in those, or baseball, or you don't hear, you know, Bryce Harper, or, I mean, just any insert athlete from other sport having these kind of issues. And the issues are always the same. It's most of the time, 9 times out of 10, It's a violent crime. It's against women. It's alcohol related. It's all these factors, that are in it, and they're all the same. So to me, it kind of lends a hand to, dude, something's going on. Either maybe, you know, maybe they've become so desensitized because of the violent sport that they play that they really don't, it really doesn't dawn on them like, yeah, pushing you is totally different than me pushing MG.
I think that there's what you're going to find if you line them up is that there's a lot of similarities all the way across the board in terms of the same, like you said, the scenarios, and I agree, whether it be violent athletes, a football player, alcohol, women, and I bet you all those stories are the same, and that's why you keep getting the same result. And I'll take it one step further, not to even say the victims, it's probably the same type of female, too. You know what I mean? It's the alcohol. Same girl from the club, you know what I mean? The same type of thing with the same. What happened was she went through my phone, and then when she went through my phone, I told her give me back my phone, and you know, and I bet you if you lined up, and it's because there's a lot of common,
common factors.
You
I believe
wrong.
That
there was alcohol involved. The girl, you felt like the girl disrespected you. You felt like this girl violated your privacy. You're used to being hitting people. You know, whatever the case may be, you've always been told this. She slapped you. Whatever the case may be, I bet you if you line them up all across the board, there's several similarities.
Oh, no. I would agree 110%. And I say that because what happens is the same thing that always happens. Guy does it. Guy runs away. Police come somewhere else, grab guy. You know, it's never like the guy never goes, you know what? I just spazzed out. I'm about to go down to the precinct. You don't even have to call.
Right.
Like, I know I just wigged out. My fault. And then you would think that a guy with Ray McDonald, with what Ray McDonald had at stake would just go, alcohol. Hey, I'm chilling on that, bro.
Yeah.
Cause that, I know that when I get
when
I get this Hennessy, when I get this Henrock in me and this Coors Light, it can get trickier here. So I'm gonna chill. You know, I'm gonna call that quits for a little bit and see where this sober life takes me. Or you would think that he would have people around him. Like, one thing I can always pride myself on is being friends with athletes and high profile athletes is that if I ain't agree with it, I'm gonna say it. You know, they'll tell you like, nah, TJ will say it. I'm just gonna say it. I'm not gonna sit back and go, hey, Ray. Yeah. Let's do two more shots. Let's do two. You don't look drunk enough, right?
You come on. Out like, yourself absolutely with people
now,
who think that way. You're
now
right.
Once you say to me like, TJ, I don't give a D. I'm gonna do what I want to do. Cool. From there,
then it's on you.
Then listen, give me a beer. I don't feel like leaving yet. I'm gonna have me a couple. You can do what you want to do, but you've already stated your, you know, I've gave you my opinion and you've told me how it's going to go forward. Cool. I can't take anything away from you. I can't put your arm behind your back. You're going to do what you want to do. But I just want to let you know this is what I'm thinking.
So I think I'm glad that the Bears acted swiftly and got rid of him or whatever the case may be. So listen this morning on Mike and Mike and a couple of other shows today. And the idea that this email just happened to be from a woman. This concept that the Bears should somehow be penalized for even signing the guy, or even that this makes the Bears organization look bad, or this is a reflection on the GM, this is a reflection on the coach, this is a program. To me, that's all you. That's so ridiculous.
This is what I would ask the folks that subscribe to that notion that it. So when you go to your Ford dealership and you go in there to get your car fixed. Right, you go in there for an oil change, and you come out, and your timing belt snap. Right? Should Ford Motor Company in Detroit, Michigan, or wherever the headquarters is, should they be held accountable? Should the VP, the C-level, have to come in there and go, yeah, so about this timing belt issue. So sorry, one bad mechanic. We didn't screen them properly. I don't get that notion to say that, a guy that was never charged, was never indicted or found guilty of a crime, can then say, well, he can't have a second chance. No way. Nothing. Why? Well, because he was arrested. Well, then I would challenge you to go in your very own workplace and walk around to people and go, have you ever been arrested? You'd be very surprised to find
how
out
how many people at your
the
job
guy sitting next to your
cubicle, DUIs.
He probably just got out the drunk tank last night. Like, oh, funny you say that. I was just detained Thursday morning. Like,
all kinds of people have domestic violence, all kinds of things that you would never. There's so many people get arrested. The normal person, if you get arrested on Friday on your weekend, whether it be for DUI, domestic dispute, or whatever the case may be, intoxication, you get out the next day and you go to work on Monday. Nobody at your job knows other than the people who are with you or that you told. That's it. Your job will never know. And you might have to tell your boss about why you're doing some classes over the weekend. And at which point your boss will probably tell you, hey, been there, done that, know all about it. Yeah. You're going to go see Susie on the Tuesday class. Yeah, they're a lot easier.
You need to speak to Katie in HR. She'll get you your necessary paperwork. Thank you for coming and admitting that you have a little problem. We totally understand it. The fact that,
but you know where that stems from, and it's something that's, it's a much deeper issue, and I'll just sum it up by saying this, and then we can move on. It's a thought, and I think me and you have talked about this before. There's this people who have this mentality and this idea that playing in the NFL, the NBA, or whatever the case may be, is a privilege, and me personally, I don't agree with it. It's not a privilege. That's not what it is. It's the best players on the planet, because, you know, if it was a privilege, then my mom would be in the NFL because she's a really nice person.
Exactly.
But you know what? She's not. You know why? Because she's not good enough to be there. So it's not a privilege.
It's
you know,
a job. It's a job. It's one of the best jobs you can possibly have in the world. It's no different from being a C-level at a Google, at a Wells Fargo. He has one of the best jobs in the entire world. Doesn't mean that he is not entitled to the same mistakes that those people are. And I guarantee you, if you go on those panels, there's somebody in there that has a arrest for possession of narcotic. I will bet a dime to a dollar. But do we care?
No.
No.
What's a privilege is being on the high school basketball team. That's a privilege.
Is George McCaskey supposed to be a clairvoyant and go, you know what, McDonald, I think you're going to May 25th, 7 a.m. You're going to commit this same exact crime. So then what goes down the road to say is, okay, so the Bears have cut him because he was arrested. What if he's not charged again? So now if I'm him, I'm going, dude, I've never been convicted of any, when you fill out that paperwork, MG and I were talking about this, it's a question. It goes, have you ever been convicted of a felony or crime? And you check no, but maybe you've been to court for a DUI and you beat it. Maybe the cop didn't show. Maybe that felony speeding ticket, cop doesn't show. Judge looks around like, I can't, where's officer such and such? You go to your boss the next day and go, hey, you know what? I was pulled over. I was hammer drunk. You won't believe this. I went to court. The cop didn't show. I beat it. Is that how you divulge it? No. You go on with your life just like Ray McDonald should. And if he's not charged with this, if the CFL wants to give him an opportunity, fine. I think his bridges have been burned in the NFL just because of putting yourself in that position, which is
so
a total,
times.
Yeah, that's a totally different topic.
Right. Absolutely.
So,
one of the reasons I always enjoy having you is because you're versed in so many different sports, which is awesome. I think you can let me know what you think. Don't claim to be the biggest baseball nut in the world. I was as a kid, so I do have a very strong baseball background in terms of, I do understand the game and I have more knowledge actually of the history than I do of the present. And that being said, I feel like I thought this the first time I saw this kid. I feel like we're witnessing something special right here with Bryce.
So in the very beginning of hearing about Bryce Harper, you know, I was hearing about, oh, it's this kid out in Vegas. He's hitting like 500 feet foot home runs.
That was in Sports Illustrated about the high school kid.
You know, and I'm going like,
he was like a sophomore. Or junior
in
high school.
And I'm like,
right.
Dude, I'm like, I'm calling BS. I don't believe it. So then he gets here as a rookie, and immediately what I saw that attracted me to his game is
the Charlie Hustle.
How hard he plays, dude.
The one play that stuck out for me for a rookie that had me sold is when he stole home.
Yeah. Like, dude.
After they tried to, like, hit him.
Yeah. Like, he's
a bad boy.
I'm not going to say a once in a generation baseball player. I'm going to say a once in a generation baseball player with those attributes and that motor. You don't get, usually the guys that are really good, they play like the guys that are really good. You know, you catch them in the outfield, like, one of the most talented guys who, when I played baseball, I always wanted to be like Ricky Henderson. Well, Ricky Henderson was never running through a wall. He'd slap his glove off his hat.
Definitely not running through the wall.
You know, he'd slap his glove on his hat. He's got all these gyrations.
Right.
He's catching the ball all the wrong way, all the unfundamental ways. And you find yourself in the outfield doing that, but very rarely coming up. And I played baseball, you know, all the way through high school. Very rarely do you ever see anyone just like, you want to just look over and go, dude, why are you going so, like,
right.
And to him, he's playing normal speed. Like, right. He's like, dude, you just play slow. Like, I think.
It's almost like a modern day Pete Rose.
It's awesome, dude. And when it first started, it seemed a little slow. I didn't know if the hype, if he could live up to the hype. And, you know, the last couple years, because he's played so hard and injuries have shortened his season and probably caused some of those numbers to be deflated a little bit. But when you see him, when he's fully tuned up and rolling, he's, you know, I put him right there. I like watching him. I like watching the kid that the Cubs got, the kid, Clark,
mm-hmm.
Chris Bryant. I like watching Mike Trout.
Trout.
I just like watching the young, talented.
Giancarlo.
I like Abreu from the White Sox. I like him. I like watching the young.
Older head.
No one really knows. It's like when those, you know, players come from, African NBA. Dikembe's 21.
Right. Well, he's, I mean, obviously this isn't a baseball show, but he's, I mean, this little home run thing that he went on last week, I don't even know what the final numbers ended up being. I know at one point it was like four and six.
He's at 14, I believe, 14 or 13.
But it was like four home runs in like six games.
Yeah,
or
he hit
something.
He hit five in 2 days. He hit two.
And then took like one game off and then hit one the next time up.
And then hit three.
Right.
So I think he's bad. I just wish that, just for the DC team, if you will, I wish that Strasburg could have been his, is he done?
His equal?
Here's something I strongly believe, dude, is that growing up, watching baseball, there was like three guys that I remember that had what you call the heater, that had the 102 and the 101 was Nolan Ryan.
Randy
Johnson and Rocket. And everybody else from there was like 92, 89. Then you had about five or six knuckleballers that were really good.
Good old Charlie Huff.
You know, Wakefield. I mean, it goes on and on. But there were now, you know, Strasburg was one of, I mean, how many dudes in that little span from Verlander to, I mean, everybody's popping the gun at 100 plus.
Right.
The kid Cueto from the Reds. Like, all these dudes are popping the glove at 100, and I'm going, dude, this ain't natural, man. And I don't care, you know, what anyone says. When you're putting that kind of torque on your body nonstop, dude, it's going
to
be short-lived unless you got the cream in the clear, like my man Roger.
Unless it's a guy, when you see guys like Bumgarner, he doesn't bother me. He's a big guy.
Yeah.
CC should throw hard. That makes sense. But when you see a guy like, and you see how long he lasted, Pedro. Pedro's the best pitcher in baseball for 7 years, and it's like, dude's like 160 pounds. And like, that's why he's done.
Yeah.
At like 29, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And not only that, he was throwing junk too. Like, he's got a high 90 fastball, and then he can just throw this curve that, you know, this 12 to 6 curveball that falls off the table. Body ain't made, listen, man.
No,
in football,
it's not.
There's something that, this is why, I hate to keep like, you know, hopping around sports, but this is what makes LeBron James so great. Like, so big, so fast, so physical. And for a time in baseball, it was like every guy was so big. And not literally, but that's how he was throwing the ball. Like, everybody's, you got 95 mile an hour heater? Oof, that's slow. Dude's like, Strauss was like, yo, that's my changeup. 95
right.
was like my changeup.
95 change. I listened to randomly on Saturday, I guess because of the slow sports cycle. Nolan Ryan was on for about 20 minutes, did an interview on ESPN radio. Excuse me. And he was talking about in his day, and they just asked him about said game, this one game that went 13 innings, complete game, him and the opposing pitcher pitched complete game. And he said that he threw 213 pitches. The other guy threw 196. That's almost like three starts for the pitchers today. And he remembered his stats, and he was just talking about, you know, and they both pitched on 4 days before that and 4 days after that. And he was like, you know, he never really had any arm trouble. And they were asking him about it, and he was just saying he felt one part of it was that as a kid, or when he was younger, he said he used to play sports year round for all different sports, and it gave his body more. He said his body was more prepared. Instead of now, he says anytime a kid shows any promise, we shut down the rest of his body and they just use his arm.
So
he's like, these guys haven't played any basketball, so the rest of their body isn't in the same condition as their one arm. So he says you're just using your one muscle from 12 to 13 years on. And he's like, he thinks that plays a large part of it, all this doctoring stuff. And he was just like, it's just a different time. And as you think about it, if things are natural, it doesn't go backwards. You know what I mean? So there's no other thing that we would say. the car, the first Ford, that'd be one thing. It was like, yeah, back in the day, the Fords used to give you 250,000 miles before you needed an oil change. Now they can only go 5,000 miles. You'd be like, that doesn't make sense.
Right.
You know, as things go forward, a car used to be, you get rid of it at 50,000 miles, then it was 100,000. Now they have cars now, the Hondas and stuff, they go for 300,000. Nothing. Like, it's nothing.
Yeah.
So now you can't be that. Back in the day, guys used to pitch. There was no pitch count. You just kept going until the game was over.
Kept going until you got in a little trouble. Then, the skipper said, yeah, give me the righty.
But now guys are getting taken out of games with no hitters at seven innings just because he's hit that magic number, 100 pitches. You're coming out.
Dude, here's what, and to piggyback off of what you were talking about, over the weekend, I had an AAU basketball tournament. I saw about two kids go down with some lower extremity injuries, knee. And I said to, which is my godbrother, Deuce, is my assistant coach, I said, you know, this is what's wrong with our generation athletically, period, is that kids play one sport, they play it nonstop, year round, and it constantly wears their body. I said, growing up, you know, we play basketball in the summertime. Then I gave my legs a rest because I played baseball. Then I gave my wrists and shoulder a rest because I played football. Then and these things, not only do they build, you know, strength and core and all that, but what they do is they build movement intelligences. And what I mean by that is they're used to making maybe a lateral step that they wouldn't make in basketball, because in baseball, to steal second base, it's a turn step. You know, all these little things that come into play, these subtle nuances of muscle memory that you need to play these other sports, essentially help you in the long run. A, you're giving body parts a break by transitioning sports. B, you're adding these intelligences, as I spoke to, the muscle memory that you need. Like, how many times have you seen a guy like Damari Carroll running down the court and almost just like blows his knee out? He's just running straight. He's just running straight. Like, when I can't remember watching basketball in the 90s and I just saw like players Zeke come down running straight and just like, wow, why does his knee go that way? Just, right. I just think that we've become too specialized in sport, and I think parents put too much on kids by making them play one sport. Like, dude, in baseball in high school, maybe we played 20 games in our high school season, and in summertime, maybe another 20, maybe something like that in that area. Now dudes are playing 100 games, dog.
Yep.
Like,
and like you said, they're throwing 90.
They're throwing 90, 100 games.
In high school.
That can't be. Now, with football, what do you got now? Now you got the 7-on-7 year-round league. Dude, that is not. And now you got guys coming in like, yeah, I had arthroscopic surgery. When? When I was 13. What? like come
Tommy
on,
John,
like,
middle school.
Yeah, like, so I really.
And I mean, it's a well-known fact that Cal Ripken was a really good basketball player.
Absolutely.
And I think a lot of those older time guys, you didn't specialize.
Kenny Lofton,
so much money on the line that they specialize. And then you look at certain athletes and you see a pitcher and you wonder, like, has that guy ever played anything else? Like,
yeah,
anything else? Cause you see the way that, like, a ball dribbles down. You see them come off the mount to get it?
Yeah.
Well, like, running with two left feet?
Yeah.
Or you know, the ability.
Or tear something trying to pick. I mean, I think that totally goes into, even looking at NFL right now, you go to your quarterbacks, you'd say, you know, escapability, and Tony Romo would be one of the quarterbacks you'd go, dude, yeah, he could make guys miss in a phone booth in the pocket.
Right.
And what else? Tony Romo's like a scratch golfer. He is good at basketball.
No, absolutely.
He plays a lot of different sports. Like,
and you watch a guy like both of the Mannings, and you wonder if they ever, what did they do at recess as kids?
Yeah.
Like, you're not going to tell me that's all they ever played was, because, I mean, they can't.
Anything.
They can't even walk. They look. To watch Peyton run is painful.
Dude, it's probably painful for him to run.
It looks, it's just like, yo, it's just, you wonder if his leg is going to, like,
dude,
break.
It's probably seized at the hip.
That's how it looks.
Yeah.
It's like, please put some grease on that
thing. I really just believe that we've become too sports specific in our society, and that's just killing. That's killing our kids. It's also, in a sense, you know, killing what baseball used to mean to me.
I saw this, and we'll move on after this because we can go all day. I saw Outside the Lines. You know, they always have these wild stories. And they were talking about redshirting at – they call it redshirting your kids, in reference to, like, what it is in college.
Okay.
Kids are – like, your kid's going into the sixth grade. You hold him back in the sixth grade so that because he's better than all the fifth graders. And they had three different parents, and the one guy said he held his kid back in kindergarten so that he could play with the same kids again next year in kindergarten. He's talking about how much better he is. Unreal. Then this one guy says his son is at Duke as a cornerback, and he made him repeat the ninth grade. Straight A student made him repeat the ninth grade. Made him repeat the eighth grade because you're only allowed to play 4 years of high school. So he made him repeat the eighth grade. So he went into ninth grade when he should, technically should have been in 10th grade and so on and so on. And they're saying that he was, from the time he repeated, he was always better than the kids a grade behind him.
So wait, are these like private schools they're doing this in?
I mean, no, you get reclassifying and the whole staying back process.
You can do that. If you want your kids to, you can do it.
Like, and I'm thinking in my head, like, just the way society is and that you would teach your kids at that age, that makes a difference is unreal. And not only that, it catches you. It's a trick.
It's going to catch up to you.
And it's going
to
catch up
to you. Because what happens is you become a 24-year-old senior. And then the NBA is like, you're like a veteran.
That's just crazy to me that society has gotten to that point that kids are looking at their fifth graders. Was the bottom line. What I took from it was disturbing is that you're looking at your fifth grade kid as like really an investment, in a sports investment. Why aren't you looking at him as an investment of a person? You know what I mean? The many several different jobs. If you can just prepare him to be a good person and a good student, there's a sea of good jobs he can get. But you're putting all your eggs in this one basket, and you're teaching him that the most important thing is how good you are in baseball at third grade, second grade. That's unreal.
No, man. Like I said, the pressures to succeed in athletics are higher and more demanding than they've ever been. And part of that is the parenting, because parents look at contracts and things like that and think and totally skip over the important part. Like, you could earn a scholarship. Like I tell my kids all the time, that is the most important part here. You can go to college and not have to pay a student loan and not have to be belly up the first day out of college. Okay. That's like the ultimate lottery ticket. Anything you do after that, brother, is just sprinkling on, that's just sprinkles on the cupcake, man.
Yep.
I think another thing it comes from is probably, the Tiger Woods effect. I mean, you see the things where he was getting trained from like 3 years old, and the Serena and Venus also. Everybody knows their parents.
In an individual sport, that's more likely, okay? And it's still probably even more unhealthy. Yeah, everybody, you're right. The Serena and Venus story is so famous, and the Tiger story is so famous. And what people think that the reason that those two girls and the Tiger are so great, you read that story and you say, wow, he started him at 4 playing golf. That means he's great. No, he's just great. He just happened to, you know what I mean? You can start 100 kids at 4, none of them will even scratch the surface of it. I mean, the reason that Serena can hit a tennis ball 150 miles an hour is not because she started hitting the tennis ball sooner than your kid. It's because she was blessed with that God-given ability.
But for every one of those stories, there's
thousands.
There's 10 Todd Marinovich stories.
Right. Easily.
Of the kid that couldn't eat carrot cake on his own birthday yet and designed to be this player and this athlete and totally skips over the parts that he needs to become an athlete, like social skills, peer pressure, learning how to say no on your own, not just because my dad says no, learning how to do those things. And when he got out into society, what was he? He was green as grass.
People need, if you're not familiar with the Todd Marinovich story, I don't know if it was a 30 for 30 or was just another ESPN. I think it was a 30 for 30.
I don't know, but I remember the Todd Marinovich story just because.
I remember when it was unfolding.
It was college football, and he was like, you know, positioned as to being the perfect quarterback. He was being groomed since birth,
Literally since birth. When he had him in diapers, and he was training him made him do like squats and diapers and stuff like that.
It's really no longer the abnormal. Nope. That's the norm.
That's absolutely the norm. Let's get into these NBA playoffs, which it's a shame. I think hit kind of a dud in his finals. And I think it plays to the matchups. The matchups just did not play out right. In the Golden State, I said it from the beginning, the only shot team that I would like to see in the Clippers in Golden State. I would like to see the Spurs in Golden State. I would like to see we did see Memphis, and it actually was better than this. I feel like any other team would have matched up better than Houston, with the exception of Houston and Dallas, are the only two teams in the Western Conference that I thought didn't match up with Golden State at all. I've been telling you all season long, teams like Atlanta are just built for the regular season. And when you go into a difference between a guy, like we said, just the easiest target in all of this, but it goes across the board for all of them. A guy like Kyle Korver is a machine in the regular season when he goes into Dallas on Wednesday, Houston on Thursday, Golden State on Saturday. And every single night he goes in there, that team isn't prepared for him. They're not watching. They're not going into the game saying, I've watched film. I need to shut this guy down. No, that's not. And then what happens is he gets 6 to 7 wide open 3-pointers a night. And he's that good of a shooter that he's going to knock down 4 to 5 of those shots. And all of a sudden he averages 15 points and shoots 50% from the 3-point line. Now what happens when you go and you play the Wizards and you're going to be playing these guys seven times? The coach assigns a guy to you, and that guy's job is to make sure you don't get any wide open shots. And now all of a sudden you're running off of 10 screens to get a shot, and that guy is with you. And when you do catch the ball, you have to catch, shoot, and turn and face the basket all within the same motion. And all of a sudden what was a 50% 3-point shooter is now a mid-30s% shooter, and it goes that way all the way down the line. And then you see your team that once, you know, everybody, the scouting report on you is out there and somebody's assignment is to make sure that that doesn't happen, you become a different team.
I would totally agree. And I also would go further to say that what I personally thought Atlanta was a better shooting team than what I've been seeing. You could go all the way back. I mean, they're getting 3-pointers from Schroeder, from Teague, Al Horford is knocking them down from the corner. I mean, DeMar, right. I mean, everybody's knocking them down. Foreign guy, the guy, the big center, he's making them.
With the P.
He's making, like, everybody's, and that totally subscribes to, like, the San Antonio way. You're like, dude, everybody makes them besides Tim Duncan. Okay.
right.
Everybody besides Tim Duncan, like Adam Benz, everyone else can shoot it. But what I'm finding out is, no, really, that great shooting percentage is if Kyle Korver makes 5 of 7, T goes 1 of 2, someone else goes 1 of 3.
Right.
It adds up to like 15 threes. You're like, they really shot the ball. Not really.
Right.
It's not really how it really went down. Like one guy shot it really well and everybody else just shot average.
No, you're right. Cause if Korver goes 5 for 9, and like you said, T goes 1 for 2, one other guy goes 1 for 2, right then you're hovering around 70%.
Yeah.
And then you factor in a couple guys misses 0 for 2, and one guy goes 1 for 3, yeah. And you're like, wow, we shot 40% from the game from the 3-point line. It's like, not really. When you watch the Kyle Korver highlights, again, I don't want to take anything away from him. I think he's one of the best shooters on the planet.
But a lot
of them are very good looks.
Oh, no, they're excellent looks. I mean,
very good looks. And you're just not on when you play the same team 4 times in a row, 6 times in a row, they're not going to allow you to get those looks. And then it becomes a trickle-down effect. And then you look at the Hawks. I mean, Cleveland has essentially got to the point where, I mean, no Love, no Kyrie Irving. LeBron misses first 10 shots for the game. They're down 1 point.
And part of that is,
what's your plan? And hopefully LeBron comes out and misses the next 10 too?
Listen,
you have to know that's not going to end. That's got to end at some point in time.
Part of that is the lack of interior presence for Atlanta. And that whole fast break, freestyle offense where you don't have the traditional five. You don't have a traditional four. So what it is it's like LeBron James is looking in the paint like, yo, like I feel like they got like, it's 3-3 guard. It's 3 small fours down there.
He's bigger than everybody on the court.
Instead of a small forward, power forward in the center, he's like, I can get in the paint and do whatever I want whenever I want. And no matter how you try to slice it, he gets in there. There are offensive rebounds that are going to happen because he's down there in the paint. There's double teams that he's going to pass out to wide open. Matthew Dellavedova is Kyle Korver because he's getting nothing but wide open looks that he's cashing in on. But when you don't have that interior defense, and that's kind of why you have to have a balancing act when you're building your teams. So whereas, and I use the Spurs as the gold standard here, whereas San Antonio, inside, they have a rim protector in Tim Duncan. Now, he may not be the most athletic. He's not the biggest, but he can block shots. He's a rim protector.
So can Tiago can as well.
Right. Tiago Splitter. If you went back to Miami when they ran, Chris Bosh. Say what you want about him. People call him soft. People question his sexuality and all those other things. But he saved a lot of games weak side blocking shots.
Absolutely.
And in Atlanta, you don't got it. You have no one. I mean, Al Horford is their leading shot blocker. Really?
That's not even what he does.
So the matchup is killing them. And then, man, LeBron's playing great, but they're getting some, like, the J.R. Smith-Dellavedova thing And that just goes, sometimes it's best player, but it always holds true in sports, man. It's really the hottest team, dude. You get some role players that are playing above their skis. I mean, it's no way coming into this series you'd go Atlanta. You would think maybe JR would have one or two games, but JR Smith has not only been consistent offensively, he's been consistent defensively. Like, he's doing something like I've never seen JR Smith do.
I look at that and I see JR Smith, though. I think a team with JR Smith as his third, fourth, or you don't even expect anything from him, that's the role that should be there, provided for JR Smith. What the Knicks asked JR Smith to do, like, if you're looking for JR Smith to be your second leading scorer on your team every night, that's a team that's poorly put together.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? JR Smith, it's not a surprise. You can, JR, if we're going into a series, there's going to be one game where he has 7 3-pointers and 28 points. That's going to happen. Now, if you're looking for it to happen every night,
trouble.
You are in trouble.
Trouble.
You know what I mean? And that's the role that he should be in. So you just wonder why so many of these GMs keeps happening in sports. You see guys like that sign whatever hot, streaky shooter, well, and you're looking for them to get that, and it's just like, that's no.
It's going to happen to JR again. Someone's going to go, dude, franchise two guard. Bag the Brinks up. JR, how's 7 million dollars sound to you? What's he supposed to say? No? Like, right. I'm really not that good.
Now, let me tell you something, and that's a perfect transition. I'm glad you brought that up. And here's a guy who, same scenario, but I think he is it. I like Klay Thompson. I think Klay Thompson is that good. And when I was watching last night, the thing that came into my mind was when KD was dominating, and everybody was saying, yeah, Westbrook's pretty good, but, you know, he's really like a two. He's really more like a Robin, you know what I mean? He's pretty good. And then when Kevin Durant went down, I was like, oh, this Westbrook guy is top five player by himself.
Right.
And I'm watching, as soon as Curry went down, Klay Thompson stepped in and did the exact same thing he's doing. Now, am I gonna sit here and tell you Klay Thompson is Steph Curry? No, not even close. That's a bad dude, though.
Dude,
he takes a backseat to Curry, as he should. But I think that he is good enough 2 years from now to be a first team all NBA caliber player.
I would totally agree. I think Klay is, his talents are truly underestimated because of the Steph Curry role in their offense. You look at Klay and you say, shooter, 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 shooter. That's all you think, right? No, dude's got bounce. Dude can defend. I mean, he's got mid range. He's got a lot of toys in that toy box. I mean, his repertoire is vast.
6'7".
Yeah, and he's a big guy. You know, at the guard position. But when you're looking at Steph Curry go for 40 and make 7 threes and beat Reggie Miller's playoff record and like
shatter
and like in one third of the games, you just totally overlook it. But that's what makes Golden State, I think, not even a hands up, like, landslide favorite, no matter who the hell they would have played coming out of the East.
I'm willing to bet that if you ask, because personally seeing the work that Kevin Durant puts in, I'm willing to bet that if you asked Russell Westbrook, he would say, seeing how much work KD put in and seeing him equal greatness, it was something for him to personally strive for in the building.
I mean,
I think that it's well known how much ball handling and how much work Steph Curry does, and I'm willing to bet for Klay Thompson to just sit back and watch and see how much work Steph puts into this craft and realize that if he wants to be that league MVP, he has to put that in, and it makes him that much better. I'm telling you, put me down to saying 3 years from now, Klay Thompson will be known as one of the better players in the NBA.
I mean, he's going to get ratcheted up the list here because, you know, people still hold Kobe Bryant in high regard out there, so he's taking an unnecessary spot.
Right.
he is holding up a place just for seniority rules alone.
And Dwayne Wade is right there with him.
And Dwayne Wade is holding up. They're going, yeah, those are the old VP guys that you're waiting for the retirement party. Mm-hmm. You're waiting for the email.
Yeah, and I think he's – with those two headed on their way out the door, and, you know, Ray just left. I have him as the next two guard. It might be somebody that I'm forgetting right now, but I have him as the next two guard for the next decade.
I like him. I like him a lot. I think he's going to be a hell of a player.
Just to watch him play, and not just yesterday. I mean, 37.25 earlier this year. And a quarter?
Dude.
That's unreal.
Dude, and the shots, it wasn't like he was just shooting your roundabout ho-hum shots. He's making contested. Like I said, He doesn't need if they can keep that team together with you know, the Bogut or with a big that can intimidate and play, I think that dude, Golden State has something scary for a long time.
Yeah, you hope in so many times in sports. We've obviously both all seen this for the longest time. How many times we've seen a young nucleus and hope that it stays together, and it just never does anymore. It's like salary cap.
It does.
Really has destroyed, because we don't have any young groups that stay together anymore. I would almost say that the Spurs thing is the last.
And you may be losing one again with Oklahoma City and KD. You could be losing.
That's another one that would have been great.
Yeah, you could be losing out. And I think what has served Golden State so perfectly is the fact that Stephen Curry signed a deal when he was dealing with those ankle problems, and so the team friendly deal that he signed,
very friendly. Was it $44 million?
$44 million team friendly deal that he signed is really working out for Golden State, because, like I said, they didn't know exactly what direction he was going, you know, physically.
And what's funny is that some people will say now that's crazy. I remember when they signed it; that was a big risk.
Yeah, I mean, they rolled the dude.
That was a big risk. I remember playing. I play in a fantasy league, in a keeper league. And one of my best friends had Stephen. He was like, I can't do it anymore. I've had him for 2 years in a row. And it's like, he's a questionable to play every single day. And it just kept being with the ankle. He'd come back, play 5 games, ankle.
Roll ankle.
For 2 weeks, come back, good 3 games, out for a month, ankle.
Yep.
He was doing that.
Dude, it was starting to become.
$44 million was not, it wasn't a steal then.
No. At the time of the deal, no. And then once he turned into the player that we have now, Golden State sitting back, and they're going, it was a great roll. I was down to my last $5. I had one more in me, one more roll. It came up 7. There's no other way to put it. I mean, that's the thin line in sports that we often GMs delve in. It's like, all right, KD's coming up. All right, he's got this foot. What do we do?
I'm going to say this statement, and I'll let you guys both either agree, disagree, and then elaborate. I don't think anybody at this table is a huge Dwight Howard fan, or really anybody in the world. Probably not even the Howard household.
You just want to go with this table?
we go with the Howard fan. A large group of our inner circle, TJ, is Lakers fans, and as Laker fan, and when he was in Orlando, I was a pretty big Dwight Howard fan. Lakers fan just turned everybody off, and then just basically what he's become ever since then, whether it be complaining, NBA players that are in the league have no problem speaking badly about him. I'm starting to think that it's gone a little too far, and that people are beginning the level of disrespect for Dwight Howard's play and who he is and what he's capable of being on any given night has gone a little too far. And people, everything he does do gets blown out of proportion. The Curry highlight, he's not the first person in it. It's not even his man, okay? The guy, Jason Terry, put nobody on the guy, on him whatsoever. Dwight Howard goes to block out somebody else. Steph Curry just comes in. It's not like he went over Dwight Howard's back and grabbed the rebound. So while I claim to be no Dwight Howard fan whatsoever, I feel like the lack of respect that people have given him, that one, this guy looks like a superhuman, and they'll say, you know, a bad game from him, he'll go out there and play terrible, and he still gives you 18 and 14.
So I think where the fork in the road with Dwight Howard comes in, the fact that so many people look at him and expect because of potential height, weight, speed. And if you really boil down some things, and I don't think a lot of fans really know, Dwight Howard's not really 7 feet tall.
Not even close.
He's like 6'9"
and
some
change. That's what I was about to say. Not even
like,
close. He's not 6'10".
He's not even 6'10" without shoes. So you add that in. He looks like he's carved out of the side of a mountain. But how many athletes have looked like they're carved outside of a mountain that could run, jump? That doesn't equate to being a great basketball player. That means you will be able to do some great things on the basketball court, but doesn't mean you're going to be a great player. So you add that in, then you get in Orlando and you're getting these astronomical 30 and 20s, and he's following in the footstep of a Shaquille O'Neal, which is so unfair.
Right.
Because they're so far away from, you know, the player. They're so far so far of a gap in between Shaq and Dwight Howard. It's like not even close. Like Dwight Howard is an athletic 6'9" guy.
Correct.
Shaquille O'Neal is one of the best athletes in the history of the world.
And he's 7 foot.
And he's seven,
solid.
He's 7 feet plus, and he's 300 plus pounds, and he moves like a deer, jumps, so coordinated, all those things. That is like Mars and a planet that we don't even know about yet.
Like, to me, it'd be like the equivalent of like a very souped up four door car. It's like, this is a really good four door car versus like compared to a Ferrari. Yeah. Like, yeah, like, that's fast for a four door.
Yeah, exactly.
That's like a Ferrari.
My neon, you know, versus your Porsche Carrera. Right. Same size car.
Right.
Same size car.
I mean, you're looking at Dwight Howard is not Shaq, and he's never going to be
so
Shaq.
And so when he started in Orlando, he's on this path of, you're thinking he's Shaq. He's, you know, he's pushing for league MVPs. He's 30 and 20, but he was playing in Orlando. So whereas he could play in Orlando because Orlando wasn't expected to, you know, it's not like the Orlando Magic are just a household name when at that point in time in basketball. He could go games of scoring 20s. And if they're losing, who gives a damn? If he's getting 20 and 30 a game, it's just like the Andre Drummond effect with the Pistons. Andre Drummond, if you have him on fantasy, he is unreal.
So many, fantasy lets you realize how many people up there put up numbers.
Right.
And no man's land.
40 and 20, but you watch them when they have to play, when he has to play a top center, or maybe it's a game with, you know, it maybe some pride on the line. Then you go, Andre Drummond is not really like, right. Watch Andre Drummond when he played in the USA trials. He's playing against the best in the world. He looked like he couldn't walk and chew bubble gum.
Nope, absolutely. But you can throw the Orlando guy in there too, the one who's down there now.
Yeah.
Vucevic.
Yeah, you
eats glass and kills it.
Yeah, but you get him against the top. So you say,
he'll give you a 20 and 20, and then he'll be like, you should be able to depend on that. Good luck.
So then you start building in this inflated Dwight Howard, if we will. And then you go, okay, no, he took Orlando to the finals. They beat LeBron. Well, it was a little more than Dwight Howard on that team. But fine. So we say we're gonna take him to L.A., and I know once he gets to L.A. with Kobe, because he's one of the two best players, or three, whatever you thought he was in the league, that they're going to rock it. What you find out is that Dwight Howard is still the same Dwight Howard that was in Orlando. It's still the same Dwight Howard that's in Houston. Is that he's not skilled.
Definitely not skilled.
He depends a lot on athleticism. And he's 6'9", 6'10". He's not a 7-footer. No, he's not a true big. So what do you get? You get nights where you're going to get 20 rebounds, 25 points. But what you never hear about Dwight Howard is like what DeMarcus Cousins does is score 40, grab 20, then block 10 shots. And his 40 points are going to come half hooks, jump shots, bank shots. I mean,
a plethora
of moves. So with Dwight Howard is, you get what you get. It's kind of like we listen to the Tristan Thompson story today. The guy goes, Tristan Thompson, and LeBron's adjectives to Tristan Thompson are, he's young, he plays hard, and he's athletic. Well,
none of those are basketball.
I can't wait to put $100 million on this guy. Like, it's the same thing with Dwight Howard. He was young. At that point in time, Dwight Howard was in the league leaders in minutes played, so he played a goo gobble minutes. He is definitely athletic.
Definitely. And he was freakishly athletic then.
Right. So, okay.
You have a guy who can catch the ball, at the top of the basket.
Right. But then you get the greats of the game, i.e. the Shaqs, the Olajuwons, and those, and they look at Dwight Howard and they go, I ain't impressed. And I remember early on in his career, guys would beat on Shaq and beat on Charles Barkley for that very opinion that, dude, you guys are having the wool pulled over your eyes. He's not that good.
Right.
Like, he's not that good. And everybody's like, oh, Shaq's just hating. Oh, Chuck's just hating.
It did used to look like Shaq was hating, but it was like, I can't believe you guys are buying this.
Exactly. He's like, dude, you got to see one of the five best centers in the history of basketball, and you're telling me that he is in our planet?
Right.
He can sit in the room with me, David Robinson,
Hakeem Olajuwon, Patrick. Put him at a table with Brad. If I'm Shaq, he's probably looking at, like, he wouldn't even be in the top.
He's not even better than Brad Doherty.
Right, that's skill what I was going to say. Brad Doherty or Sabonis when he got here. And yeah. he was already done at that time.
Yeah. Divash, I mean, you could go a list of bigs back in the then, league. That was so much more skilled than Dwight Howard. And for every bit of athleticism that he has within his body, there's one thing that's undefeated with all that athleticism, and that's Father Time. So you get a back surgery in there, and then you start saying, well, he kind of looks like his old self, but not really. Some nights he does, some nights he doesn't. But still, what skill have you seen? Have you seen a half hook? I mean, it was a point in time where he had worked out with Hakeem Olajuwon for a summer. And he came back that year in Orlando, and that's when Orlando went to the finals. And I don't know, many people probably won't remember this, but he had a little face-up bank shot that he was shooting.
Yes.
He was going left-hand, right-hand hooks. Yes.
And that was like 4 feet, five feet. But yes, yeah.
I mean, and his game, it was like, is he turning the corner?
And then nope.
But then nope, because guess what? His whole life, he's always been athletic, big, strong, fast. It's not like Dwight Howard just out of nowhere just developed that, you know, that physical and athleticism. So where he did work out with Hakeem and he did get those skills, and for that summer he really, you know, put some work in. I'm gonna just jump out there and say that stopped after that season.
Right.
Because you don't see those skills anymore. You haven't seen him shoot a bank shot off the glass in about 4 years.
You ask yourself, I mean, is he, if we're doing a scale 1 to 10, I'm saying DeAndre Jordan is like a 6'5", and Dwight's like a 7'5", maybe 8". I mean, I don't even really see that much of a difference. I would like to say, by name brand sake, you say the obvious answer is Dwight Howard is much better than DeAndre Jordan.
So you
When you think of a skill set, though, I can't say that Dwight Howard can do anything that DeAndre can't do because he doesn't have any post.
They do the same thing. They do the same thing. I think that if Dwight Howard played for the LA Clippers, you get a lot of what you see from DeAndre Jordan. Chris Paul lobs, block shots.
I do think now in terms of Dwight Howard being able to take the Magic to the finals, I don't think DeAndre Jordan would have been able to do that.
But what you have to realize is that particular Dwight Howard was a Dwight Howard that you saw then and you haven't seen since.
Right.
Like I think, and that's what happens with athletes is that we take contract year athlete and make him, that's who he is, athlete. No, that's me when I'm fully focused, when I'm showing up every day, I'm working on my craft, I'm doing the things that we call Kobe Bryant and them insane and bullish and all. I'm doing those things that they do on a daily basis just because for 1 year I just wanted to push myself. Oh, it's my contract year or I've been challenged. Those guys don't have to be challenged. Those guys wake up and they do that in their sleep. You know, and I think for Dwight Howard was, what did he go back to? He go back to what he was always relied on. Athleticism, I'll play a little defense, I'll eat a bunch of rebounds, and guess what? He'll be no better or worse for it. He's going to get $100 million. See, and that's the thing, too, you got to factor in, is the athlete knows, like, dude, all right, so I go out and I work on a jump shot and I can get a 17-footer. What's that really going to do for me right now in my career? It's not like they go like, here's max and $10 million for that jump shot, Dwight. Like, there's nothing's gonna happen. So he can rely on being the same player that he is right now, and he'll be fine. You know, you can see Blake Griffin had started out on that road, and I take my hat off to him. I thought that Blake Griffin would be a Dwight Howard kind of, like, would never develop any offensive skill.
And he has.
He's totally. Every year I see something new to his game.
He's gotten a lot better.
You hear me?
And he's an excellent passer.
You hear me? A lot better. So while I watch, we talk freak athletes that probably could just get by on having a good point guard and being athletic, Blake Griffin was one of those guys. But now what I see is, I see skill development.
And he's gotten better every year at something. He came in as, he also was like DeAndre Jordan with the 50% free throw shooter.
Exactly.
And he's now up to 70.
And now.
Which makes all the difference in the world. You can't hack anybody with shooting
70%. And then on top of that, I mean, every now and again, he'll stretch out and knock a three down. I mean, I'm watching it. And that's what I thought when people hung the Dwight Howard, one of the best big men of all time, hat on him. It was that year in Orlando, like I said, when he came with post moves. He's knocking down, you know, bank shots and all. And we're like, uh-oh. Now, this could be, you know, if he keeps this up, this will be trouble.
But random sports fact for you, A1. I'm going to tell it to you, so I don't even give you a guess. You know that Blake Griffin averaged more assists this year than Kyrie Irving?
I didn't know that. No.
Did you know that, TJ?
No, I didn't, but it wouldn't surprise me. You know why? This is why it wouldn't surprise me. Because four of those assists are no brainers. Four of those are just like
DeAndre Jordan.
Four of those are just DeAndre. Where are you? I know this is probably a bad pass. You'll correct it. I know you'll make this pass look amazing. We could act like I meant to throw it off the top of the glass.
Right.
And you caught it.
Absolutely. What happens next before we get out of here? What happens next in the unfolds? I think we're all in agreement.
Atlanta's
who's
done.
Going to be in the finals.
Dellavedova needs to be suspended for 2 weeks. I can't stand him. I'm sorry about that. I had to get that out. I had to get
it
off my
chest.
I was
very bothered by the one with
Al Horford. Kyle Korver.
No. The one in Chicago.
Oh, that the Taj Gibson.
Yeah, that one was one, I was so mad because of the outrage listening to the call and the announcement. Todd Gibson just stepped on him and kicked him for no reason. And it's like, that's the type of stuff that makes you mad, because there is a reason. There's a lot of reason. The guy wrapped his legs around him, leg locked him.
Yeah, that's
he's trying to get his leg back.
People talking about that Kelly Olynyk. That was MMA. That was some MMA move. You flip up.
Right, absolutely.
I think what stinks, what I want to see in basketball, taken away and then added. Taken away is I want some of this power that the referees have. Let's take it back a little bit. Let's let these men be men on this basketball floor a little bit, and let's let some things go. Be instigator and retaliator should have consequence. So we look at, if we go back to this Dwight Howard thing,
the guy pushes him in his back.
Bogut should get some kind of repercussion.
Right.
And I don't want, and here's what I want to see change. I'm tired of the post game technical. Like, oh yeah, after the game's over, it's been changed. Okay, so when the next game starts, we need to start out the game. I need two. Dwight Howard needs to step to the line. No, I'm being serious with this. He needs to step to the line. He shoots his two free throws. Then we then start the game. Like, because what the hell does it matter if you give Dellavedova a tech after the game?
Right.
Then the Bulls should start out the next game on the free throw line. This is a penalty.
As crazy as it sounds, if you're right, there was no consequences of a technical. If it's
like what, so what? So we look at the Al Horford, we look at the Kyle Korver play, and it's like, dude, I'm watching it right now, dude. You know you're by my legs. You know what my knees mean. You know what the knee means to a big guy. Because you're a little guy. So I'm gonna tell you what, this isn't the first time you've done something. Like, you've boxed out a guy one time too low, and the dude was like, "Dude,
cut that out.
You way too low. You're down here by my knees. Like, cut it out."
No,
so you know that. So that means you're doing it with a certain kind of malice, or because you know that either that guy's going to back off the ball because he doesn't want to get involved in that trash, or if he does, there could be a consequence, and you could lose one of your best players.
Yeah.
I think that referees, if they're going to go in and they're going to replay, you know, everything and take 20 minutes to make a decision. Well, then add in the intent of the other guy. What was his intent? Was his intent with the leg lock? What was his intent? Was he trying to hurt Taj? One ref says, it looks like to me he's trying to hurt him. Other ref says, look, throw him out too. Throw him out too.
I agree. I'm calling it now. I think Golden State won.
It's Golden State in five.
Five?
In both series.
Okay. No, I'm not even talking about this series anymore. I think that one is done. I hope that Kyrie Irving rests up. And what did you say, anything other than Golden State walking through Cleveland? I won't say walk through, because LeBron deserves more respect than that.
It just saying, listen, man, what you found?
I could see Golden State no more than six.
Go ahead.
I mean, I think it really depends on how healthy Kyrie is. I mean, if he's hobbling like he is, then yeah, maybe a sweep five, you know, but if Kyrie's healthy, I mean, anything could happen.
I've got a side bar, if you will, about this whole Kyrie LeBron thing. Is that LeBron's having to tote so much that he's slowly wearing down.
LeBron?
And this is reminding me of that year in Cleveland when he said enough is enough, when he broke down physically. And he's like, dude, when they play the Spurs, and he just broke down, he's like, I can't tote no more. And it's starting to get that feel. He's cramping up. He's playing a bunch of minutes. And against Golden State, you think the minutes, you think you're lose any minutes on that stat line? You might ratchet up and have to play 48.
Now, here's last issue before we get out of here. Hindsight is 2020 is the same. So I want to use this hindsight now. The Kevin Love trade. Do you do that again? Because look at this team right now. Kevin Love isn't there, and there's a very good chance that he never.
Kevin Love won't be there.
Yeah, there's a good chance that he wasn't there. So now you go back and you look. What if you had added Andrew Wiggins to this team?
I think personally, LeBron would have been winning championships for years to come, because not only is Andrew Wiggins a good player, but then he has the opportunity to learn from the world's best player, and it's not just learning moves; it's learning, you know. Discipline, what to do on and off the floor, how to approach the game, how to approach game situations in game.
Do you think LeBron had no interest in grooming the next LeBron?
That could be it too. That could be that. You know what I really think it is that he wanted to step into Cleveland and he wanted to win now. He didn't want to have to build something. Even though I know he said he wanted to build something, dude, he's not that far down the road in his career, and he's looking to say, yeah, I'm looking for a couple of 30-win seasons before we really break out. That's not what he's doing. He's walking in the door like, yo, I need two other stars, and I need them now. And I don't give a dang about no draft picks. You can trade our first-round pick for the next 6 years.
Right.
Won't matter none to me because I'm worth a first-round pick every year for the next 5 years until I'm about 40.
What do you think about the notion, A1, that maybe LeBron wasn't in love with the next LeBron already being in the building?
I mean, I think it's just pretty much like what TJ said. Like, I think he was just more concerned about winning now.
I think so, too. But as you look at it now, I think nobody's more – I think LeBron is fully aware that in the Eastern Conference, it's not going to take that much to get to the NBA Finals. So you have to figure, okay, if I got me and Kyrie sprinkling some other guys, if the guy Andrew Wiggins is anything halfway decent of a basketball player, he should be able enough to get us to there. And then if he becomes 3 years from now, if he's at the – which what it should take to him to get to all-star level, and then I'm here.
I'm the old lion.
We could do this for a while.
But the thing is, Kevin Love is already proven, and Kevin Love is, what, 23, 24?
No, he's not. He's older than that, but he's still young.
Yeah, he's young. So, I mean, I'm thinking they were kind of betting on the fact that Kevin Love was already proven and kind of like, you know, a bird in the hand. You know, we already know what we got with Kevin Love rather than, like, taking this chance on Wiggins, who we don't – he could pan out. But if he doesn't and LeBron comes back and he's like, well, Wiggins sucks, so I'm leaving after my 1 year's up. You know what I mean?
Hindsight now, again, start the question back, bring it back. Would you do that trade again?
Knowing what I know now?
Yeah, knowing what you know now. Would you trade the number one pick for Kevin Love? What looks like might turn out to be for 1 year.
No.
Steve?
If I were the GM, I'd go no, because I got to believe that LeBron James is worth two players. And that's what he's shown. Like, okay, we get out the East, but can we say with Kevin Love? I mean, even constituted with Kevin Love, they're probably the third best team in the West. And that's just being honest. Even with Kevin Love in the lineup, they're probably the third best team in the West.
But, I mean, it took – when he went to Miami, it took, you know, that it wasn't necessary. Everything didn't go great that first year he was there. And they did lose to the Mavericks in the finals in six games. So, I mean, who's to say that Kevin Love couldn't come out next year more comfortable, look, you know, the system
better. It doesn't look natural.
It doesn't look right.
It doesn't look natural. I think you look –
what's disturbing to me is he's not at the game.
No.
Yeah, that's
like really –
well, he's just been okay to travel because of his shoulder, so I think he's going to travel with the team from here on out. That's what they posted on.
That's because they had to say.
Oh,
something.
Oh no, absolutely.
Because when you look down, there's no shortage of suits there. But dude, Kyrie's over there. Dude, what's his name?
Look at
been there every game, and he hasn't played since like week three. Varejao.
Body language. Body language says everything. Look at Kevin Love's body language when he did play. He's out there on the perimeter like, this is the last place on the world. I do like shooting threes, but when I want to shoot them. Not when LeBron passes me the ball and I have to shoot them. Right. I like shooting when I want to shoot them. That's how we did it in Minnesota.
What did he think he was going to get coming to Cleveland in the first
place?
But
Chris Bosh had a great statement. Chris Bosh said the best. Chris Bosh, like, dude, no one really understands what you're getting into when you're asking to come and play a role that you've never played in your life. Like, they're coming to you and saying, yeah, we know you can score 30 a game. We need like 50.
Like, I mean, did he think he was going to come and, like, Cleveland have three people scoring 30 points a game?
You know what? Probably, yeah. He probably really thought that. He probably think, like, I'm going to Cleveland. I'm going to be an all-star. I'll average, you know, 20, 25, whatever I did. I'll grab my 20 rebounds, and that'll be that. And we'll be one of the greatest teams ever. No one ever thinks, like, dude, there's not enough basketballs out here for me.
Right.
Like, no one ever comes to that conclusion. Everyone is just like, no, it's going to be great. Everybody's going to score. No one really goes, like, whoa.
Because they've never had that in their career.
Exactly.
Because everywhere they've ever been to.
Exactly. So everywhere Kevin Love's been, he's alpha dog.
Right.
Yeah, does he acknowledge LeBron James as a better player? Maybe. But internally, he's like, I can go get me a number. And LeBron's like, dude, I need you to scale it back. You're on 10? I need you at like 4. From the offensive perspective. Now, if you want to play defense, and then those are other things. Like, it's like, okay. So in Minnesota, what we did was like we came down, we really shot the ball, but like this defense thing, so uncool, it's so stupid, and people got so tired of doing it that we totally trashed that idea, and we just went with the offensive thing. And like LeBron's like, nah, bro, your man can't. It doesn't mean anything. And this is what I used to say about Kevin Love in Minnesota. It was like It don't mean nothing if he gets 20 and 20 and LaMarcus Aldridge gets 30 and 15. Right. What the hell does it matter?
Just up there running up and down trading baskets.
That's all we're doing. Yep. And that's what you found in Cleveland.
And that was what I used to tell you all the time, A1, is that I don't think he's a difference maker. I mean, his numbers are video game-like. But, I don't think he ever affected the outcome of any basketball games with those numbers. He certainly didn't affect the outcome of his team. That's for sure. The Timberwolves were nothing. And his numbers were better than LeBron. His numbers were better than anybody. They were unreal numbers.
Yeah, but that's no different than, like, say, DeMarcus Cousins. Like, are his numbers video game numbers?
DeMarcus Cousins, if he does this for another 3 years and never scratches, then I will say the same thing. DeMarcus Cousins is still young, and they haven't been trying to build a team around him. He doesn't have anything around him. You know, so if 4 years from now we're having this, if DeMarcus Cousins is still putting up 25 and 15 and 5, and the team wins 10 games a year, then you're not affecting the outcome of the game. You're just putting up numbers. You know, when it was like Slim said about it was time for what's-his-name to do that, and I said he did. Anthony Davis was putting up video game numbers, and then he started affecting games. It's like steps. You know, you get the numbers, then you start affecting the outcome of basketball games, which is more than just numbers. So, I expect, and the thing is, I expect DeMarcus Cousins too. He's young and he's last of a,
I mean,
last, he'll probably be the last big man we see.
Let's, you know, DeMarcus Cousins and Kevin Love, they're on two opposite ends of the spectrum, talent wise. Let's just be open and honest there. Okay. I mean, Kevin Love is great, spot up shooter and awesome rebounder. DeMarcus Cousins is,
he's an animal. He's
a rebounder, shot blocker. He's the full Monty. Okay. Yeah, so let's, but like I said, what Kevin Love is going to do is, he went to UCLA. His uncle, I believe, is one of the Beach Boys.
Something like that.
He grew up in California his whole life. His favorite team was the Lakers. He'll be a Laker.
If he thought Kobe was hard to get along, I mean, if he thought LeBron was hard.
I don't even think it's LeBron hard to get along with. I just think that it's the way they need him to play to be successful. See, when L.A. with Kobe, it's Kobe can shoot, and then I can shoot. See, with LeBron, it's, okay, J.R.'s going to shoot about 5, Kyrie's going to shoot about 10, and I'm going to make sure they get the ball. So I'm going to look directly past you, like, this is not your time yet, Kevin. This is Kyrie time. And I dominate the ball every time, so you're never going to get it.
Right.
It's not like you're going to get it, come down, and call your own set, you know? LeBron is the point guard. He decides, he'll look at you, tell you, no, no. Give me the ball back.
Right.
Like, that's what Deion Waiters no longer is there, because a couple times Deion said, I didn't see you.
Yep.
I didn't see the light. I didn't see it.
So go look for it in Oklahoma.
Yeah. Good job. So,
all right. Anything else you want to say before we get out of here? I haven't got your topic on the your take on who would you take number one?
In what?
This upcoming draft, Okafor or Towns?
Call it Anthony Towns, and it's easy for me.
Towns.
And it's because I said this, and I'll say it again. Jahlil Okafor, 7 feet tall. And if he blocked 2 shots a game in college, I would be awfully effing surprised. Okay. Let me just say that. He is not the explosive athlete that I would like to see at my 5. Like, I just, you got to be a rim protector. When you're that big, you got to be a rim. Frank Kaminsky should not be just doing the do-si-do around you. And you should be, you know, glassing some of these shots. I don't see that. What I see from him, he reminds me, if we said one, he could be like the new age Brad Doherty, like a guy that played below the rim. Because you don't see him doing a whole lot of dunking. Like, that's another thing. Like, you know, at least when I saw Nerlens Noel, and I don't think he was worthy of a number one pick, he was finishing a whole lot at the rim. And he was altering a whole lot of shots.
Definitely altering shots.
I don't see that. While I am Jahlil Okafor skilled, maybe Tim Duncan esque. Maybe he can get into that category, but
he blocked 1.4 shots
at 7 feet.
At 7 feet in college.
In college basketball.
Yeah, so I mean, that which means that's
a sign
to go up when you get to the NBA.
But that's a sign of athleticism.
No, yeah, absolutely.
So I go Towns.
That's a good argument. I that was a good selling point in terms of, because you know, the point that most people are selling for not going Okafor one is that they're saying that the game has just changed so much, and that there's really no need for a dominant low post big man like that, or you need your big man to do more. But I think that you're right. That I think the truth lies in the mixture of what you're saying and what the people are saying, is that I do think there is a place in the big man for the big man now, but I think you have to be a rim protector. If you're not going to be versatile and able to step out,
you got to be a rim protector.
Then you got to be able to protect the rim. You can't not be able to go and guard the stretch fours and not
we can't get, you know, three or four block shots from you. And so that's, I think he lies in a gray area.
He's not even like a dominating boards guy.
And part of that is effort. Part of that is athleticism. And Coach K kind of hit on it a little bit when he talked about work ethic.
He said it.
And I was like, oh, I don't like that.
He said, I don't like that at all. He said three things. Colin kept talking about it, saying that he was like, his work ethic needs to work. You know, he has a lot of maturing to do.
Yeah. See that right there.
Hope he continues to get coaching.
Yeah. Like that right there. Those are a couple red flags. And then, like I said, to be as built as he was he good? Yes. Will I remember his freshman season?
Nope.
Hell no.
He was definitely, you know, the Andrew Luck sort of thing going on. They were talking about, I forgot what the phrase was, but, it was suck for Luck, but it was something for Khalil. I can't remember what it was, like stinking for Khalil, whatever the case may be. Teams tanking to get him before he'd even
release them. Yeah, I don't see it, bro.
Yeah, I agree. Anything you want to say before we got here, anyone?
No, I'm good.
Still looking up that stat from
I think it's still compiling information for us.
Anything you want to say before we get out of here, too?
No, man. I just want to see. You know what? I want to see both teams. Like, so Golden State has to play the fifth game. I want to see Cleveland play. I don't want anyone getting more rest than the other team. I want to see, like, an even playing slate going into the finals. I think that just make it interesting.
I want to see Kyrie 100%. It would have been nice for Kevin Love because I feel like it's already – built in. And I wonder what happens if you do win a title without Kevin Love. God, what does that do to him?
That cements it even more. So then he reaps all the benefits. I got a big contract. I didn't have to play, and I got a ring. I'm gone. Thank you, and I'm out.
That would be terrible. All right. Well, we will see you next week. Next week hopefully next week we'll be doing the NBA Finals preview. Then.
Yep, sure will. And getting ready, and then we should have a little bit of OTA information. OTAs began today.
Yep.
So, you know what always happens in the summertime in the shells? Someone blows a tire. Or someone is all world.
That's horse.
Someone's league MVP after OTAs.
Well, that's what you're going to see. You're going to see somebody's going to be all pro, normally in this area. Out there in Ashburn, they dominate OTAs.
Someone is winning the Super Bowl, the OTA Super Bowl.
Somebody is going to trick the team about a blown tire that they hurt in the offseason with their homeboys.
Yep. someone definitely had a jet ski accident. They can't wait to get the OTAs and die for that ball to go. Rotator cuff. I totally felt it go. Never mind that tree I hit. We were out there on the dirt bikes.
At my friend's bachelor party
in Cabo. Yep. Nope, just waiting. Yep. I'm going to tough it out.
Terrell Suggs joint was hilarious. My man blew out his knee at the basketball game and then tried to tell him that wasn't him. Like, no, I wasn't at the game.
No, definitely wasn't me. The guy wasn't calling me Terrell. He was saying, Harrell, hello.
He said he wasn't even there. They're like, he saw our doctor and everything. He's like, no, it wasn't me.
No, dude. No, you think about Terrell. You think about Harrell Hugs.
Playing football, buddy.
Yeah.
Heard this playing football.
Heard this one right here. Right here. You saw it.
Hilarious.
So.
All right, guys. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening. Make sure you download the podcast on iTunes and on the Android store. Subscribe so that way it automatically downloads to your phone every time there's a new show. Thank you for continuing to listen. And if you enjoy the show, make sure that you share it with your friends. Let them know where they can get some good sports talk and some good laughs for an hour out of their week. Thank you again for listening, and look forward to seeing you guys next week.
Same bat time, same bat channel.